Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites. Another opening of
another show. Now, how many times can you revive and truly rethink a show just when you thought it couldn't get any more reimagined or reconfigured to fit a new time? Well, someone does it. Now, who knows what Rodgers and Hammerstein would have thought of the new version of Oklahoma? It was their first collaboration that is selling out nightly at St. Anne's Warehouse in Brooklyn. I honestly don't know the answer, and well, we never will. The current production was certainly the most interesting of my theater-going week, which also included a British comedy about what we would call billiards, and a bleak and edgy drama by a film director making his first attempt at conquering the stage. But let's start in the Dumbo section of Brooklyn. The show is theoretically called Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma, but in this case it should be called Daniel Fish's Oklahoma, since the director has kept the words, characters, and songs, but little else. The setting, as always with St. Anne's, is innovative. The audience sits on two sides of the stage. Some are so close as to almost be part of the action. Let me say that audience members and critics alike are divided over this production. Some find it thrilling, and others, myself included, find it mostly pretentious. It runs 3 hours long, and the pacing is slow. There are gimmicks which I just did not care for. At times, the whole theater goes dark while a conversation ensues between characters. Why? I have no idea. At another point, two of the characters are projected on a screen in close-up. Why? The same answer. The second act begins, as did the 1943 original, with a solo dance number. Agnes DeMille's choreography was a famous ballet. Well, now it is an African-American in a contemporary t-shirt that reads Dream Baby Dream, doing a very long, almost defiant modern dance number. There is clearly a Me Too slant to this production. Just watch how those women shuck their corn. And plenty of that works fine. The performances, meanwhile, are all over the place. Rebecca Naomi Jones as Laurie is an excellent leading lady. Damon Dauno is a charisma-free choice as Curly, her leading man. For me, the standout was Michael Nathanson in the humorous role of the Persian peddler. I've got a brother who only has one wife, he says. He's a bachelor. The music is played by a bluegrass band on stage, and while the famous songs are here, the Surrey with the Fringe on Top, Oh What a Beautiful Morning, People Will Say We're in Love, and the title song, they don't quite have the impact you'd expect. Now, I am all for taking a fresh look at classics. For me, this one felt more self-important than revelatory. It's hard to find any beautiful mornings through the darkness here, but again, others disagree, and well, that's what makes the theater world go round. Then there is the one show of my week that is actually on Broadway, and that is The Nap, a Manhattan Theater Club production at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. This one is written by London's popular Richard Bean. His last big thing on our shores was One Man, Two Governors, which introduced us to a performer named James Corden. The current show is about a game called snooker, a popular pub activity, which looks pretty much like our pool or billiards. It centers on a championship weekend in Sheffield that involves a young man who is being pressured to tank, so to speak, so others can come out ahead. It's not worth trying to reconstruct the plot, but it includes that character named Dylan, his father who has done some rather shady things along the way, an opponent or two, a beautiful young woman who may or may not be a police officer, a transgender conniver behind much of the action, and, well, at least seven or eight others. This is all directed by the very busy Daniel Sullivan. Humor, obviously, is totally subjective. Some find The Nap enjoyably witty. Others I noticed walking out at intermission, or dare I say, napping. This is farce, but not slapstick, like the other British comedy, The Play That Goes Wrong, which is ending its run on Broadway. There are some clever lines. I was a pole dancer. It must be genetic because my father was a fireman. The unseen announcers for the final game will get even the non-laughers to smile, I think. The But there are too many jokes about vegetarians. When Dylan explains he does not want a sandwich with anything that has brains, he's told they're shrimp, not novelists. And the constant malapropisms uttered by that transgender powerhouse named Waxy Bush grow tiresome. The peanut analogy, the child effigy, I'm internally grateful, and so on. We can watch the actual game playing on a screen above the actors, and apparently even the performers aren't sure what balls will go in what holes exactly when. Well, if this sounds like your cup of tea, you will likely enjoy a few hours to snicker while they snooker. My final show is the Always Challenging. It's at the Always Challenging Flea Theater in Tribeca. This season, they are focusing on race issues. And the first is a world premiere of Emma and Max. The name of note here is that of writer-director Todd Solondz. He's the filmmaker behind exceedingly dark films like Happiness, which are rarely about people finding that, by the way. Nor do they in this play, Solondz first. Four actors enact this tale about a nanny from Barbados who in the first scene is being fired by an entitled, vapid, self-obsessed couple. "I feel guilty that I don't feel guilty," says the wife, who calls her bad day my personal Kristallnacht. 90 minutes later, we learn what has led the nanny to do something unspeakable to the two children. They are the Emma and Max of the title, by the way. This story, I assume, was inspired by a real-life case that shook the Upper West Side a few years back. The play is well performed by the actors, but the pace is sluggish, if purposely slow at times. For example, we watch the nanny laboriously moving the sets between scenes, toting that barge, lifting that pail, all these decades later, I suppose. If nothing else, the play will offer future acting students three challenging monologues. Each of the main characters gets a very lengthy one. Not a bad play, but clearly not for everyone. So another only in New York kind of week for me. Some laughing, but not quite enough. Some thinking about an ongoing issue, but not in a subtle enough way. And discovering, Jill, that some old things can be new, if not necessarily better, again.
Apropos, when are you going to see My Fair Lady?
Ah, soon.
Yes.
Laura Benanti comes into the role. And I am going to go see that, of course, because, A, I love her. And I think it's going to change the tone of that one, which also strikes many people as being kind of bloodless and humorless. And if nothing else, this will be a more enlivened Eliza.
It is interesting because I am always fascinated just by things that go on. And when different people pop up different places, and I was looking through a cast list, and Laura, it's apropos Laura Benanti. What was her first show? Do you know? It was, and I don't, it's not a quiz, but it was.
Well, I think she was in Nine. I think she was one of the stars of Nine, that musical, and.
Well, it was a little after. It was a little after that, and it, you know, she was a triumph and a joy, and she sort of it wasn't a starring role, but she was, her talent was absolutely clear in the way that going back, Faith Princess, you know, it was just absolutely. So I just
Gypsy. I think she might have been her first Tony nomination for Gypsy, where she played the. Rose, the daughter, the ugly duckling who becomes the stripper. She's, there are a lot of Benanti fans out there. I always thought she should get this part. So we'll see. We'll see what she does. Yeah.
Taking nothing away from the person who's currently playing it, but bringing me to it. It is hard to know if there's, and this is a personal. Response. This is a personal reaction to responses I am hearing. It feels sometimes as though what's missing is the joy and the fun.
I agree. And you're talking about My Fair Lady.
I'm talking about, there's nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with doing a new take or bringing a woman that has, who comes in with a sense of gravitas, maybe in general, or the way we've seen her on TV. And, of course, would bring her own interpretation. And, you know, you forget how important, well, we know how important casting is, but how one person, sometimes it can just be a misfit, other times they change They really change everyone the meaning has, of a role.
Because you have to play to it. You know, if the center, so to speak, is a certain way, then you know the planets have to move around that center. They just do. What I find fascinating is, of course, Diana Rigg is Mrs. Higgins. You know, the role of Mrs. Higgins hasn't changed that much.
Right.
And that is, especially as some of us get older, that was memorable. That was memorable as a kid, and that's equally memorable now because, you know, as one evolves through life, let's call it, you gain wisdom, even the thickest gain wisdom from experience and begin to know that it's not quite as black and white as you think it is when you're in your early 20s, which you're meant to do.
Absolutely. No, the audiences change as they get older. The actors change a piece. This Oklahoma, the casting of that was very obvious. It's obviously multicultural and very diverse, but that's fine. We've gotten used to that. The men are still men. The women are still women. But, you know, odd casting that really, for me, hurt it badly. When you see a curly who looks more like an Italian, an Italian pizza maker than he does a cowboy from the West, you wonder about some choices. And I think they heard it.
And when is New Company coming?
I don't know when Company is coming here. Certainly not this fall. Maybe in the spring. I don't think it's on the fall list. We have a lot of things on that fall list, as you know. But in terms of musicals, I don't think Company or Kiss Me, Kate are coming till next year. I may be wrong, but I don't think so. And, you know, I was thinking this week as I walked by School of Rock still playing, and I thought to myself, wait, I thought that closed. And I've said this to you a few times, that they announce shows are closing, but then they're not closing. It turns out for like 6 months. But
right.
What theory behind that? I guess they're hoping to sell so many tickets quickly, which makes sense.
No, I always thought just money. Again, going back when, you know, 9 weeks, 12 weeks to give people the opportunity. You know, not everybody in the world focuses on what's opening and closing any given day. So you say, hey, basically it's like last chance. Come see this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does make sense. Also, I don't think you're going to fly across country to see, I only have 12 more weeks to see School of Rock. But it does give people the opportunity, and it gives investors a chance to make some of that money back that they're probably not going to recoup in the end. But, God, it's happened to a number of shows. I think there must be 5 shows out there that I've read that are closing. And they are, but some of them literally not until next year.
Right.
So there's plenty of time. People should know that A, there's plenty of time. One other thing I want to tell people, because somebody heard that I was at Oklahoma, and she said, how did you get into that? It's completely sold out. And I said, you know, I'm looking around right now, and I'm seeing 8 empty seats. And people should know that even if it says sold out, if you're dying to see a show, you should go to that theater, wait till the last minute. Now, it's probably not going to happen with Hamilton, okay. But it's happening. It's happening at the public theater where you think nobody can get in to see the Bob Dylan show, Girl of the North Country. But, you know, there are empty seats. People don't show at the last minute. You pay for them, but you shouldn't give up. And if this sounds like an Oklahoma that would interest you, get to St. Anne's. You may end up being part of the action.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.